Welcome to The Bridge, a weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgan, your host for the show. Get ready for another sales tax debate in Oregon. Governor John Kitzhaber is brokering talks with business and political leaders about the recurring proposition.
I expect we'll get something on the ballot before 2016, but I think it's premature to really delve into the details of that until we know a little bit more about what's possible.
Chris Lehman reports on the emerging proposals coming up in about 5 minutes. Later in the show, we'll hear about Astoria's Winter Brew Cup and Bacon Fest, with the Astoria Winter Market starting Saturday. Astoria Downtown Historic District Association Executive Director Elena Garner and Astoria Sunday Market Executive Director Cindy Mudge have the details of this fun event taking place downtown at the Event Center. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge. I'm Kathleen Morgan. Get ready for another sales tax debate in Oregon. Governor Kitzhaber is setting his sights on a major overhaul of the state's tax system. Democrat kicked off his campaign for re-election this week, but behind the scenes, he's gathering business and political leaders for talks that include one of the most politically taboo topics in Oregon, a sales tax. Salem correspondent Chris Lehman reports.
Oregonians proudly point to the fact that their state is one of just five in the country without a sales tax. In reality, residents and visitors pay more than $1 billion a year in sales taxes. They do when they buy gasoline.
Hey, hi, could I have $10 a regular?
10 on regular?
Rent a car. Or stay in a hotel room.
Focus your lodging search on Motel 6 Coos Bay. We'll leave the light on for you.
And don't forget beer and cigarettes. All told, these so-called selective sales taxes cost Oregonians, yes, Oregonians, an average of $377 a year, according to the Oregon Legislative Revenue Office. But that's small potatoes compared to what a broad-based sales tax would cost. At, say, 5%, the state could expect more than $4 billion a year in new revenue.
For the average Oregonian, their taxes won't go up. They'll be different, but they won't go up.
So how can Democratic State Senator Mark Haas make that claim? His proposal would pair a sales tax with cuts to the state's income tax. By adding a sales tax to the mix, Haas hopes to even out Oregon's up and down economic roller coaster ride.
We have this terrible boom and bust cycle tax code. We bring in too much in the good times, not enough in the bad times. And it's in these bad times when Oregon has a train wreck.
Haas and other legislative number crunchers figure that even if you cut the income tax, you'd gain more than enough back with a sales tax. For one thing, all those tourists coming to Oregon to see Crater Lake or go skiing would pay taxes every time they ate in a restaurant or bought a souvenir. And a sales tax would also reel in cash from people who, well, operate in cash. Income that may not make it to their income tax returns.
I always say drug dealers, they have to buy sunglasses.
So-called essentials like groceries and medicine would be exempt, and Haas's plan would also create a sales tax credit that low-income Oregonians could file on their state tax return. Those details help alleviate the concerns of those who worry about the impact of a sales tax on the poor. Chuck Sheketoff is with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. He doesn't think a sales tax has to be paired with an income tax cut.
The problem with lowering income tax rates generally is that the biggest winners are the wealthiest Oregonians.
Sheketoff and others on the political left would rather see Oregon raise income taxes on corporations. That's a strategy favored by Joe Basler. He's an Oregon lobbyist for the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Basler says that while he's not opposed to a sales tax per se, he also thinks voters just wouldn't stand for it.
It lost by a lot in the 90s, and maybe things have changed, but it seems hard.
Basler's not kidding when he says it lost by a lot. 75% voted against it back in 1993, the last time it was on the Oregon ballot. And even though Governor Kitzhaber is open to the idea of a sales tax, it's clear that he's well aware of the challenges involved. And he's in no rush either.
I expect we'll get something on the ballot before 2016, but I think it's premature to really delve into the details of that until we know a little bit more about what's possible.
And what's possible from a numbers standpoint isn't the same as what's possible from a political standpoint. That 1993 vote was the ninth time Oregonians rejected a sales tax. The first was in 1933. I'm Chris Lehman in Salem.
It's not just the weather that's been frosty, so are political relations in the Washington state capitol. With split control of the legislature, grueling negotiations have become the norm on the budget earlier this year and now on transportation funding. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins reports the partisan divide cuts against a refrain you hear a lot in Olympia.
We're not Washington, D.C. That's what they say. But you might think otherwise when you hear exchanges like this one at a recent climate change workgroup meeting. Democratic Governor Jay Inslee and Republican State Representative Shelley Short tangled over state targets for reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
I've heard two members of these committees to see it's really not that important to meet those targets. And I think it's going to be difficult.
No, you started this fight.
So
the tension in the room was in stark contrast to a couple of days last month. Washington lawmakers and the governor set aside their partisan differences to approve nearly $9 billion in tax incentives aimed at landing Boeing's 777X assembly line. Chris Vance is a former Republican state lawmaker and past chair of the Washington State Republican Party. He views the Boeing kumbaya moment as an aberration.
The main thing that I see missing in Olympia, and even worse in Washington, D.C., is a commitment to compromise.
Consider the protracted budget negotiations in Olympia earlier this year that led to two overtime sessions.
There are times when you have to go into the room with the other party and say, we're not leaving here without a deal. We're going to get the best deal we can, but if we have to, we're going to compromise and give up some things we really believe in because we have to make a deal on this.
In the end, that's what happened, but it took the threat of an imminent government shutdown to finally hammer out a deal. Still, House Budget Chair Ross Hunter, a Democrat, rejects the suggestion Olympia is broken.
We actually talk to each other like in rooms, not just across the beltway or whatever they do in D.C. And yeah, it took forever.
But Hunter believes the proof is in the product, not the process, and he notes the final budget won hefty bipartisan support. Now a similar drama is playing out over a proposed multi-billion dollar gas tax package. Boeing says this is one of its must-haves if it's going to build the 777X here. The governor uses his bully pulpit to pound home the transportation funding message every chance he gets.
I've been pushing for this since my first day as governor. And now we know it is an essential piece of our aerospace future, as well as the broader economic future of the state of Washington.
Negotiations have bogged down over disagreements about transit funding levels and what the Senate Majority Coalition Caucus calls transportation reforms. That coalition is a group of 24 Republicans and two breakaway Democrats who took control of the Washington Senate last January. Republican Curtis King co-chairs the Senate Transportation Committee. Here's how he summed up the state of negotiations when I asked him recently on TVW's Inside Olympia program.
I think we're not that far apart, to be honest with you. It's a matter of a few things here and there, but they're kind of major things.
The fact it's taking a while for Democrats and Republicans to negotiate past their differences is no surprise to a former governor, Republican Dan Evans.
Big issues of the day don't succumb to quick answers.
Evans says as long as the two sides are actively negotiating, that's not D.C.-style gridlock.
I'm not feeling any despair over the lack of a transportation package at the moment. I would be at the end of the legislative session if they haven't come up with one.
There's another multi-billion dollar challenge. The Washington legislature is under court order to amply fund public education. This year, lawmakers made an initial down payment on that ruling, but they still have to come up with another $4 to $5 billion over the next two budget cycles.
Well, I think getting to adequate funding for our schools is going to be a multi-year challenge.
Governor Inslee, speaking by cell phone, likens it to climbing Mount Everest, one step at a time. He says he'll be back in 2015 with fresh proposals to eliminate what he calls unproductive tax loopholes.
So that's the next step, and we hope that the majority caucus will help in that effort.
I agree with the governor. It's going to be a multi-year process.
Republican Steve Lietzau chairs the Senate Education Committee. He doesn't reject Inslee's call to eliminate some tax exemptions.
But that's going to be a combination of money and reform in the system.
Reforms before revenue. That's become a Republican mantra at the State House. Washington lawmakers return to the Capitol next month for a short 60-day election year session. The very fact elections are looming will likely harden, not melt, the partisan ice. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
Natural gas is cheaper than the gasoline or diesel that goes into most vehicles. It burns cleaner, too. Those are two reasons trucking fleet operators in the Northwest are showing growing interest in filling up with natural gas instead of diesel. The problem is there are very few filling stations for natural gas. Now several big utilities in the region are asking to get into this line of business. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports the proposed expansion comes with some controversy.
Delivery truck driver Corey Scheller has one last stop before he can call it a day. He has to refill the gas tank of the beer truck he drives for Kent, Washington-based Click Wholesale Distributing. But there are just a few places he can go. That's because this otherwise normal-looking Ford box truck has been converted to run on compressed natural gas, or CNG.
One thing I noticed right away was the price on the pump.
Oh yeah, it's good.
As in the equivalent of $2.14 per gallon good. Scheller says he's glad he no longer spews diesel exhaust on his rounds delivering beer, wine, and spirits.
I feel like I'm helping, you know, in some way, at least the person, you know, behind me driving.
Scheller's bosses say cleaner air and the lower fuel price are key reasons they aspire to convert the company's entire fleet. Engine maintenance cost savings are another plus. By early next year, Click Wholesale CEO Jim Florio hopes to have 7 of his 20 trucks fueled by natural gas.
Along the way, we've been told that, well, you're going to be the guinea pigs for this. And we felt that way a little bit. But right down to our drivers have come back and said, I really feel good about driving this truck.
Florio says the lack of refueling stations is a hurdle for wider adoption. Washington has 7 public CNG stations, all in the central Puget Sound region. Oregon has just 3 public filling stations, Idaho 2.
We're all very limited, especially if a station goes down in a core area and somebody's running low on fuel. You may not have enough fuel in the tank to get from where you're at to another station that's available.
Florio says there needs to be a stronger refueling infrastructure to get to the next level. Enter the Northwest's biggest gas utilities.
So as we saw our customer interest grow, we said this is sort of a natural place for us to provide a service that would help our customers.
Ben Farrow is Puget Sound Energy's manager of natural gas and electric development. He sees a potential market of thousands of vehicles, which could plausibly be converted to natural gas just in western Washington. PSE and the Portland-based utility Northwest Natural have approached their respective regulators for permission to sell on-site fueling stations to fleet operators. Spokane-based Avista Utilities says it's interested in this too and may follow. But wait, third-party installers of natural gas fueling stations cry unfair competition. Warren Mitchell is chairman of a nationwide station builder and operator called Clean Energy Fuels.
We feel to have utilities enter into the natural gas refueling infrastructure market creates an anti-competitive situation because of the advantages regulated utilities have as a result of their monopoly status.
Advantages like captive customers, cheaper access to capital, and the ability to cherry-pick customers based on inside knowledge of usage. In regulatory filings, Northwest Natural and Puget Sound Energy say they plan to run their vehicle fueling programs as discrete, self-sustaining operations to ensure fairness. State regulators in Oregon will decide later this month whether to allow that, and a decision in Washington State is expected next year. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
The Northwest deep freeze is over for most of the region, but snow remains in some areas and winter is just arriving. That means more cold temperatures and potentially icy commutes in the months ahead. Correspondent Austin Jenkins got some secrets from the experts on how to drive on ice.
Kent Hitchings is a sergeant with the Washington State Patrol. He's got more than 20 years in the job, and he has one word for winter driving in the lowlands of Puget Sound.
Awful.
Hitchings says winter road conditions here are treacherous, even compared to his native Iowa.
It was just a different type of snow. The wet, damp snow here combining with our freezing level temperatures just kind of makes that instant ice, which is a challenge.
Instant ice. It's what Northwest lowland winters serve up on a regular basis, especially on bridges, overpasses, and on and off ramps. That's when cars go slipping and sliding. In the moment, we often panic and brake or steer too hard and end up in the ditch, or worse. The trick on ice is to apply a light touch and not overcompensate. But what if conditions suddenly change and you're driving at freeway speeds?
It's tough. You're basically going to have to ride that one out.
Which is why Sergeant Hitchings and his colleague, Trooper Darren Wright, say drivers need to do a much better job of anticipating the conditions. Wright has patrolled Washington Snoqualmie Pass area for nearly 23 years and says he's never run off the road.
That leads me to believe that almost all of the collisions that are blamed on the conditions, the snow and the ice, are preventable.
Trooper Wright says his magic formula for not crashing is drive the conditions and buy a good set of tires. This time of year, the patrol uses Ultra Grip winter tires, but not studs. Trooper Wright also offered a couple of handy tips. If you're not sure if the road is wet or icy, look to see if there's road spray coming off the tires of nearby cars.
It's not foolproof, but if you see a wet road and there's no spray coming up, there's a very good chance that it is frozen.
Tip two is a state of mind. Give yourself permission to be the slowpoke in the slow lane.
There's many times I'll be doing anywhere between 5 and 10, 15 miles an hour down the freeway, because that's what the conditions warrant.
Advice from a guy who's paid to speed. I'm Austin Jenkins reporting.
Still ahead, a new local chef's syndicate will be part of this weekend's Brew Cup and Winter Market in Astoria. Organizers are reaching out to tourists and local people.
Well, every time we've had a winter market, it's brought new people down to an area of town that sometimes our own locals forget about. And so in this case, the west end of town, there's some great restaurants down there. We're within a block of 10th Street that has some great shops. So it just introduces people to another end of town.
Winter Market Director Cindy Mudge and Astoria Downtown Historic District Association's Elena Garner will have the details coming up right after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region. Today, a slight chance of rain this morning, rain this afternoon, and breezy. South winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting to 30 miles per hour, then increasing this afternoon. A chance of rain near 100%. Rainfall amounts a tenth to a quarter of an inch, highs in the low 40s. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says tonight the front goes through with the rain turning into showers tomorrow, diminishing showers tomorrow night into Saturday with weak ridging in place. Saturday night, a weak and dying system moves across, giving us clouds and another chance of rain into Sunday. For now, the long-range models suggest periods of light rain for the beginning of next week, with a disturbance or two riding over the top of the ridge and dropping across our area. High temperatures slowly climb into the mid to upper 40s through the end of the week, with lows in the low 40s. On the Coast Community Calendar, the North Coast Symphonic Band will be presenting Yuletide Tapestry, conducted by Dave Becker. Special guests will be the North Coast Chorale and String of Pearls, featuring local soloist Bob Walters. The program starts at 7 p.m. on Saturday evening. Tickets are available at the Liberty Theater box office. Santa will have candy canes for the youngsters after the show. And the Astoria Public Library presents a concert of holiday music performed by the Consort of All Sorts, Astoria's early music ensemble. That's taking place tomorrow night at 6. The concert will feature vocal and instrumental music of the 17th and 18th centuries. This concert is free. Families with children are welcome. Finally, holiday cheer will mix with holiday shopping and some good food starting on Saturday in downtown Astoria. Earlier, I talked with the two women who are spearheading this event.
So Elena Garner from the Astoria Downtown Historic District Association here is in the studio this morning, along with Cindy Mudge, Executive Director of Astoria Sunday Market. But this is a special market that's coming up, and we're going to get to that in just a second. But Elena, tell us about this coming weekend's Brew Cup.
Yes, so we are doing a winter Brew Cup in conjunction with the winter market, and it's a continuation from the September Pacific Northwest Brew Cup that we had. And it was just it just kind of happened in conversation with Cindy, and just wanting to do something. We have some extra mugs left over and just wanted to do something fun to end the new year, and we thought, well, why don't we just do a winter Brew Cup? So this Saturday and Sunday, that's when we're doing it.
Okay, well, same Brew Cup, obviously it's about beer, but yes, that's not all.
Right, yeah. So there's also going to be bacon. It's more of a bacon and beer fest. And it's from the North Coast Chef Syndicate. It's a group of chefs, local chefs, that are coming together and wanting to do bacon items and bacon-inspired dishes. There will be some vegetarian dishes as well. So in case you're not a bacon lover, you can, there's something for you to eat as well. But it's just this collaboration of chefs from Baked Alaska, Fulio's, the Colombian Cafe, and a few others. And it's going to be a fun weekend.
So we can stroll through and then we can sip samples of beer and samples of bacon and beer infused
yes.
tidbits.
Yes.
And there's shopping involved as well.
Yes. And the winter market, it's just a great holiday of bazaar. Is that?
Well, I think that leads us to Cindy
sure.
Mudge talking about the market portion of this event.
Yeah, we actually have about 30 vendors that they all make their own gifts and crafts. So you'll see some favorites from Astoria Sunday Market from the summer, but there's always also some new people who come in for Astoria Winter Market. And every day there's usually someone new there, and definitely from one weekend to the next, you'll see some new people. So there's always something new when you come to the winter market.
So Brew Cup is the 14th and the 15th. That's this coming weekend.
Yes.
But the Astoria Sunday, the winter market, is two weekends.
Right. Astoria Winter Market is two weekends, 14th and 15th, and 21st and 22nd. And it is put on by the Astoria Sunday Market group. So it's a program of our regular Sunday market.
So we'll see some familiar faces from the summer Sunday market.
Yes.
And maybe some new people.
Oh, yeah. And we'll have Christmas wreaths there. And one of our farmers is bringing in some wreaths and other greens. So there'll be definitely some fun holiday things there.
So we've got beer and bacon from the Brew Cup, and it sounds like we might have maybe some organic vegetable offerings at the
No,
the
by green stuff, I mean holiday greens.
Okay, not edible greens.
We don't really have anything growing on the coast right now.
We still have root vegetables.
Well, there we go.
Buried under the snow.
But the farmers don't quite sell enough to come out for this one. This is more of a boutique market for holiday shopping.
And the proceeds for these events are going to?
So the North Coast Chefs Syndicate, their proceeds will be going to
a local nonprofit.
Yeah, some local nonprofits.
Okay, so have a lot of fun and support the community at the same time. Win-win.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And just to reiterate, it's a lot of local things. It's local chefs, it's local vendors, and so it's just a good way to come downtown, shop local, sample some beer, bacon, and it'll be a fun holiday weekend, and there may be a special guest. I can't say who.
All right. actually, Elena reminded me of a couple of things. One, we do have live music this year at the Astoria Winter Market because the Astoria Event Center has this great stage. So we'll be bringing in the Port City Players will be performing one day, and that's a group of high school students, actually. Brad Griswold will be performing, and Greg Park. So each day we'll feature a different, and Greg Park has his own holiday music. They're all going to be playing something a little different than we're maybe used to hearing from a couple of these musicians. And there's one live artist performing each day. The other thing is, Winter Market, we've always moved it around to different parts of the city, partly because in search of space, but also it highlights a different portion of the city, and our boards really like that. And it's been wonderful. Every time we've had a Winter Market, it's brought new people down to an area of town that sometimes our own locals forget about. And so in this case, the west end of town, there's some great restaurants down there. We're within a block of 10th Street that has some great shops. So it just introduces people to another end of town that they can continue shopping. We have a great, wonderful walkable downtown. So we do hope that people use the winter market as a starting point and kind of finish up their shopping the rest of downtown while they're there.
So if you haven't really had a chance to visit Astoria, or if you're new to the area and you haven't really walked around town, this sounds like a great opportunity to get acquainted with the downtown area.
It's perfect, and this time of year it's always fun to walk through downtown. We've got the lights and the holiday trimmings, and so it's a great way to explore downtown.
Okay, well, Lena Garner and Cindy Mudge, thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
That's all for today's edition of The Bridge. We welcome your comments on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to News1. That's NEWS, then the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. I'm Kathleen Morgain saying thanks for listening, and join us again next Thursday morning at 9:30 for more local and regional Northwest stories. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.